west in Iowa and in Missouri. As the storm system lifts into the Great Lakes, enough cold air will arrive to change the rain to snow this afternoon and evening. A light snow accumulation of up to 1 inch will be possible in east central Illinois near the Indiana border, with higher amounts further to the northeast. Motorists planning on travel east into parts of central and north central Indiana should be on alert for the potential for several inches of wet snow late this afternoon and into this evening. For the most part, high temperatures this afternoon will be in the upper 30s and low 40s, with mid 40s across Missouri. Low temperatures overnight will range from the upper teens in Iowa to 30 degrees in central Kentucky. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon: rain possibly mixing with or changing to snow. There will be little or no accumulation, the high around 40. It will be windy this afternoon with the wind out of the north at 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to 40 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain or snow this evening. It will be colder, the low 25. The wind will be from the northwest at 20 to 25 miles per hour with evening gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 40. The wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour tonight. Tomorrow night, mostly clear. Expect a low of 25 tomorrow night. The wind out of the southwest from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly sunny. Look for a high in the low 40s. The wind will be from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday night and Friday, mostly cloudy. The low Thursday night will be in the upper 20s. The high Friday in the upper 30s. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid 20s. And the outlook for Saturday, partly sunny with a high around 40. At noon central time, temperatures were in the upper 30s and low 40s. At O'Hare, it was 44 degrees at the top of the hour, 37 at Rockford. In Bloomington, 40 degrees. At Mattoon, 37. Carbondale reported 36 degrees. At South Bend, sleet was reported, 37 degrees there. Light snow was reported at Lafayette, 36 degrees in Lafayette. 37 degrees at Indianapolis with light rain, and Terre Haute reported light rain with 38 degrees. Willard Airport reported a cloudy sky at the top of the hour, 41 degrees. The dew point, 35. The relative humidity, 79%. The wind out of the north at 24 miles per hour with gusts to 30. The barometric pressure, 29.84 and rising. And at 12:40, 41 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. As the Defense Department braces for hundreds of billions of dollars in cuts, one program will not be slashed: the military's remotely piloted aircraft drones. The U.S. Air Force says it will have trained more drone pilots in 2011 than fighter and bomber pilots combined. NPR's Rachel Martin visited a base in New Mexico where pilots train to operate the systems. She has more on how remote technology is changing aerial warfare and the pilots who wage it.
Steve, a lieutenant colonel, grew up wanting to be in the Air Force, and that meant one thing.
I joined hoping to be a pilot.
To him, flying is physical.
Flying a fighter, there's a lot of physiological impacts on the body, whether that's pulling G-forces up to 9 Gs, or whether it's hearing the airplane around you, the noises that you hear when you're flying the actual airplane, and inside of it, you feel those things, you hear those things, and you react to them as you need to.
Steve joined the Air Force in 1997 and started out flying F-15s, but he quickly started to see signs that his world was changing. He was given a chance to fly drones, and he took it. Now, he's out in New Mexico, helping the Air Force build a different kind of pilot.
I'm standing here at the entrance of Holloman Air Force Base, and right at the entrance, there's a display of old planes. I'm standing right in front of an old F-15. The last time these flew out of here was almost 20 years ago. Now, Holloman Air Force Base has become famous as the primary training ground for pilots who fly unmanned aerial vehicles, or drones.
Holloman is the biggest training center of its kind in the country. They train pilots here to fly the MQ-1 Predator and the MQ-9 Reaper, two of the military's most important weapon systems. These remotely controlled planes can hover in the air 24 hours at a time, collecting intelligence or carrying out a strike in Afghanistan. But the pilots are thousands of miles away, sitting in front of a bank of computer screens.
This is our simulator bay.
We're in a small room jam-packed with computer processors and monitors.
We have a high-resolution scan of Kabul down to the building, and so this is that scan.
This is Matt. Like Steve and every other instructor and student at Holloman Air Force Base, they're only allowed to give me their first names because of what the Air Force says are, quote, security concerns. At their workstations, the student pilot sits on the left, the sensor operator on the right. That's the person who monitors the aircraft and weapon systems. Matt loads in images of Afghanistan and gives the assignment.
They have a tasking to go provide convoy escort for some Humvees.
This is where student pilots first get their hands on the remote controls.
Then they're going to scan the route that they're supposed to travel on and see if there's any threats for that convoy.
Remember, they're flying a drone over Afghanistan, but they're sitting in New Mexico. The training program at Holloman started in 2009. Slowly, service members started volunteering to fly the Predator drone. This year, the Air Force says it'll train more drone pilots than fighter and bomber pilots combined. There are two big reasons for the shift. The first was 9/11. America's borderless war on Al-Qaeda catapulted drone technology onto the front lines. The second reason, budget cuts. Air Force fighter pilots started to see their squadrons disappear. That's what happened to another lieutenant colonel named Mike. Up until a year ago, he was an F-15 pilot. Now he's also an instructor at Holloman.
I felt, you know, with the F-15 drawdown, that community was closing up and there would be more opportunity, but also a chance to be part of the fast-growing industry in the Air Force.
Now, the challenge for Mike, Steve, and all the instructors here is to convince students that when they're operating drones, they are flying real airplanes.
And we can walk in here and through here.
We walk out on the flight line, and Mike points to what look like metal rectangular storage containers.
This is called the GCS, the ground control station.
After they've mastered the simulator, student pilots come here to take Predators and Reapers out on test runs. They control the planes from inside the ground station. A shift can go for hours until another team comes to relieve them.
Oh, here there's a crew swapping out right now.
We walk further out on the flight line, and Steve shows me one of the test planes.
Okay. This is the MQ-9, the Reaper.
He says training can be the only time drone pilots actually see the planes they'll fly.
You normally just walk out to the container that we walk past on the way out here. You sit down and you fly, but you don't actually see this, and you're physically dislocated from where it's at.
Until recently, most drone operators were regular Air Force pilots. Now, the service is reaching out to people who've never even flown before, and that has caused friction within the Air Force as it tries to redefine what it means to be a pilot.
There's a cultural divide. There is.
That's Kelly. He's a 46-year-old Air Force reservist from Texas, now a student at Holloman. Kelly grew up wanting to be a fighter pilot, but his vision's not that great. However, he can fly drones. And Kelly says that irks fighter pilots who see themselves at the top of the Air Force pyramid.
Part of it is an ego, and I hate saying ego trip, that's what it is.
The Air Force has been working to bridge the divide between these two groups of flyers. First off, drone operators are called pilots. They wear the same green flight suits as fighter pilots, even though they never get in a plane. Their operating stations look like dashboards in a cockpit. But all that has made tensions worse. Aaron is another Holloman student. He used to fix military communications equipment. Now he's training to operate drones.
There's still a lot of animosity. You see people that are in conventional air crew that wonder why we get to wear the flight suits even though we don't leave the ground, why we have to have flight physicals, why do we get incentive pay, stuff like that.
Steve and Mike, the former fighter pilots turned drone instructors, say the Air Force is going through a cultural change. It gets back to that distance drones create between the pilot and his plane. It's something Steve is still trying to make sense of for himself.
So that distance and that separation is there that prevents you from feeling that piece of the airplane or maybe being as one with the airplane. But what it also does is it takes you the risk out of you flying the airplane so you don't have to worry about being shot down.
So the very thing that protects these pilots, not being in the cockpit, is what makes them wonder if they are really pilots. Outside, an F-22 flies overhead, a plane with a fighter pilot in the cockpit. Holloman does fly fighter jets out of here. It helps remind new pilots like Kelly how they're supposed to think of themselves when they're flying a drone.
I felt like I was actually flying an airplane. I mean, I actually am flying an airplane.
At least, that's what he has to tell himself every time he sits at a computer operating a plane thousands of miles away that he's never seen. Rachel Martin, NPR News, Washington.
The housing crisis has stalled home building, but apartment construction is undergoing a bit of a boom. In Denver, demand has outstripped supply. Ben Marcus of Colorado Public Radio reports.
The first thing you notice about Lynn Mayo's apartment is her boyfriend's proudly displayed rock poster collection.
Most notable feature of the house.
This two-bedroom apartment in Denver's Congress Park neighborhood costs them more than $900 a month, a bargain when you consider the costs of home ownership.
Absolutely. They just found out that this place needs a new furnace. So, not my problem. And, you know, the toilet needs a new seal. Not my problem. The roof needs to get replaced. Not my problem.
Mayo did try in 2009 to buy a home using the first-time homebuyer tax credit, but because of stricter lending standards, she couldn't close the deal. Though these days she sees herself as lucky, having watched her friends struggle to keep their homes.
And so I think that the idea of a home being an investment is kind of a myth, and I just don't see the benefit, really.
Mayo and thousands like her have flooded Denver's rental market. Stricter loan standards, foreclosures, and a fast-growing population have pushed the city's apartment occupancy to a 10-year high. And builders have noticed the trend.
My name is David Zucker. I'm president of Zocalo Development in Denver.
Zucker stands next to his latest project, a poured concrete building near downtown, crawling with men in hard hats. For the past few years, apartment construction, or any construction for that matter, was at a standstill in Denver.
And so the fact that we are in what might be considered a building boom today is truly remarkable.
This project was originally planned as condos, but when the housing market collapsed, Zucker went back to the drawing board. Eventually, his financiers looked at all the renters entering the market, and they liked his new idea of retooling the project from 60 condos to more than 200 apartments.
In 2010, they were not interested in new construction, and today they are. It was such a quick reversal. What was it that changed? It was the realization that multifamily is a relatively safe investment today.
Now, more than a dozen apartment buildings are going up in the Denver metro area, and dozens more are planned. Greg Benjamin is with Northmark Capital, an investment brokerage firm. He says financing is available now because demand is outstripping supply, allowing landlords to charge higher rents.
Which is now getting near the level that you can justify new construction based on those types of rents, because now we have a